Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
You're listening to Live from the Path, recording from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. Oh, yes, I am. I am a special. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, it is.
Hey, do you think I should get to... Boova and I were talking about social media before the show started. Boova, what are your thoughts on giving the thrift store priest his own Instagram account?
Oh, I'm down.
This is a good idea,
I think,
right?
That's an amazing idea, yes.
I mean, I was thinking amazing as well. I'm glad you validated
whatever,
that.
Dude. I'm past you right now, and I'm making that Instagram.
I don't know why that's a question. I mean,
no, that's true. That's
hey,
true.
Man.
I'm a little self-conscious, I guess.
Okay, speaking of things that might be bad decisions, we need to talk about something real quick and something that's going on.
I'm a great judge at this, so go ahead.
Tannis, I am ready.
Here's the deal. Have you guys heard about this man romper thing?
Yeah, I heard about
romp
it.
Him.
Yeah.
Anybody? Anybody else?
You have a problem
that? Yeah, okay. I mean, I saw
terrible.
So here's the deal. I need to know if the urban gentleman is a man who owns a pair of rompums.
No.
No?
Boy, that's not even...
100% no?
Steve, what was his name? Urkel? Not Urkel.
Irwin?
Yeah, Irwin.
Yeah, Urkel probably had him too, but
Irwin. But Irwin rocked it.
Yeah, he also wrestled alligators.
So that's what I'm saying. So,
I think you have to pretty much exude manliness to even wear one.
So what you're saying is...
Sorry, I've conflated Steve Urkel and Steve Irwin.
Yes.
I knew it was an something. I don't know how it ends. Get it started. You
possibly
guys got to finish
Urkel,
it for me.
Possibly Irwin.
Those are two sides of a chess game there.
two
and they wear their pants quite differently.
Literally.
One's a little higher.
Two very different things.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I think I would submit that the urban gentleman wouldn't even ask that question.
Oh, man. Well, we already determined a long time ago that I am not one of the urban gentlemen, but I'm working on it. Man, I really want a pair.
I think it depends on the beard.
It depends on the beard? Is this the hipster conversation again, Dan?
It could be.
All right, fair.
I mean,
and the tea.
They got it better than the ladies, right? Because if you have to go to the bathroom, there's still a zipper, right? Like, it's still...
Yeah.
See, that's what I'm not certain of or not. I don't think there is.
I think there is.
If you got a... Well, you know what I'm saying.
Mike, I think we understand the concept.
You got to Tommy Blair this thing to the floor just to use the urinal. That's a problem.
Oh, man.
But, Nick Harris, you said you didn't see a zipper on that thing?
I haven't been checking for him either, but...
What's that call?
Hey, for the record.
Nick's a cool guy. Does that automatically mean I'm not cool for asking? Oh, man.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I suppose I determined.
Nick Harris may be the urban gentleman.
I'm perfectly fine with that.
All right.
Did I do that? Crikey! That was my Steve Irwin.
Oh,
Steve
man,
Irwin.
We're going to have to turn that to sound bit for something.
Yes. Hey, you're listening to Life. I don't know what you're doing with your life. So anyway, here's what we got going on the show tonight. Mike is mulling some stuff over. is there any hint to what this is about, Mike?
Well, some of it ties into the Hebrews. Because, I mean, for life me, like, when I read the Hebrews, I think, who is this for? I can't pick up none of this. it's just above my scalp. You know,
I think it's for the Hebrews.
It was written for the Hebrews, right? But like the content and the depth of which it's not the milk, right? Like it's definitely not milk. And so I thought, you know, when Jesus says he goes back for the 99, this is what I'm mulling over, right? When he says he goes back for the one, because practically, like generally, my advice when living a following Jesus type of lifestyle, I'm like, you don't need all this huge Melchizedek information. You know what I'm saying? Go out and love people. Tell them, it's simple. It's straightforward. He loves you. It's powerful. You don't have to have all this stuff. So who in the right mind cares about this Hebrews book that is so deep and tangled, right? And I'm like, it's got to be for that one guy, right? Like, it's got to be. It's merely in there. I mean, it does a lot of work that I generally would not ever want to reference or need. Do you know what I'm saying? If the book of Hebrews was taken out of Scripture, I could still tell the gospel as it sits, and it would be just as powerful as it ever was, right? So that's what I was mulling over.
Some people are trying to argue about that about restricting the canon. Mike wants to pull other things out. He's like, you know what? I can give or take Hebrews.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Give me one of the gospels, a couple of the letters. And like, I mean, I cover most bases, you know?
I mean, Jude, Hebrews, who needs them?
You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. I think it's jam-packed full of stuff. It is like... I guess the whole point, it gets you beyond the Gospels. Like, okay, but, you got the Gospel. Now, by the way, keep going.
Well, see, and maybe that's what I'm getting at is like, I don't know. Like I can do all the work I'd ever need to do and live all the life I'd never even need. This sounds terrible. Out of the Gospels, the New Testament, like it expands and deepens the story of God through Hebrews and the rest of the New Testament and tying in all the Old Testament. I get that. I'm not saying that there's not. Obviously, God made the book. He says this is the way it's going to go. I'm the fool in this equation, right? But like the depth of which it's starting to tie things in and the story it's trying to tell. Like I cannot grasp it on my own. I just can't. It's just not built for people like me. And so I'm either saying that I have to come up to the stature that is Hebrews, right? Like I have to rise to it, or God included Hebrews merely for the one of the sheep that escaped that would actually understand Hebrew,
who happens to be Jewish.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, there is a context to it, right? Like it is an argument.
Yeah,
it is a discussion about someone who's saying. How do I rightly understand Jesus? We're largely not having to come from we were introduced to Jesus without that backdrop.
Correct.
And so reasonably, there's a Hebrew man who says, I mean, I hear what you're saying about Jesus as the high priest, but we have a high priest. God created the high priest. What the heck? How am I supposed to understand the replacement of this thing? Does that mean what you gave prior to this point was no good? And what does that make Jesus then? He's not a Levite, like you
said.
Yeah,
so
right? You know what I'm saying? Like it is a specific discussion. It is aimed at a group of people in context. However, that does eventually show up in every poor atheism discussion that ever happens. And in someone, as they start to read the Bible, then they say, well, yeah, how am I supposed to understand that high priest thing? And then you find yourself sitting in the same bleachers that the Hebrews are, who are like, yeah. What are we supposed to do about this, God? Didn't you create that to begin with?
Well, I've heard that atheist argument. I just never really took any weight.
I don't find it persuasive.
I don't care. You know, what you're saying don't make any sense to me.
Well, I think it's like a lot like Revelation. Hebrews and Revelation, the more you know the context and understand and appreciate the angles coming from, the deeper it is. And so it's an extra step. To learn the culture and who they're speaking to, and that's what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not a casual sit down. And,
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that that I don't think it belongs in there.
Right.
I'm just saying like these are just things that I'm mulling over. Like I could follow Christ faithfully my whole life and never once have come across that high priest argument and care. You know what I'm saying? Like I read Melchizedek, I'm like, you know, God says it's right, so that's. That's fine with me, you know.
Yeah,
it's just and maybe that's just not my work.
That was the missing piece. Melchizedek. Now I get it.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose that's true, right? Like this is for people who are having the discussion or who have these types of concerns and asking for the explanation. If you're not asking for the explanation, I mean, it doesn't necessarily answer a question you're asking.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that the implicit thing has to say, hey, I have to ask this question, even though I wasn't wondering about it, just so I can read Hebrews to get it.
Right.
Right? Like, I don't know that that's implicitly necessary.
I mean, here's the thing. There's value in me going through Hebrews. Like, I'm going with some fellas, right? And, like, I'm not saying there's not value in it. There's certainly value in it, right? But, like, I know for a fact, the more I get around good Bible teachers and the more that I listen to good Bible teaching, the more, I would never ask the questions they ask. And like, I've been around good Bible teachers a long time. And I'm still not there. You know what I'm saying? Like, I get what I get. And like, so I have to, what I'm mulling over is, am I a dummy? And I'm just happy with that, right? The Lord created a dummy. And like, I just don't. And like, people are like, it peels like an onion. Or there's service.
Don't read chapter 4.
And this goes deep. And like, and this really can, I'm like, man, I'm sitting on the 3 foot water. I'm like, this is great. I don't care to go to the 9 foot. I'm happy in the 3. I can talk to people in the 3.
Yeah,
but I think like you just gotta ask God for the understanding, and you know, like
he has
shown
you
things.
He said, "I created you to be a dummy."
Yeah,
I'm not telling you anymore.
It's okay. It's okay to not understand it. But like me and one of my other friends, we've been actually trying to learn how to read Hebrew, and you know, like write the letters, and you know, we starting out small or whatnot. But I mean, it's something that's real hard. But once you really got the drive to try to learn, and you got the right people to teach you, like you said, like, and you ask God for understanding, and I mean, he give you the things that you lack. It's just all about the desire that you had to learn it, you know?
Yeah.
That's all, pretty much.
That's true. That's true. Although, I will say, like, so the section of Hebrews that we're most likely to use, right, is the talking about going from milk to meat. But, like, that is also a specific argument. Like, that actually isn't, although you can use it for kind of generally broad application. He's specifically saying, you guys knew better, like, this full story of God. You've chosen not to go farther. That's why you're asking about why Jesus could be the right high priest. You don't understand the root of Melchizedek. Like, these are things that you actually should have known, but your ignorance is causing you to question things that you shouldn't question. So, like, I get it. I get how we use that, but, like, I think you do have to be a little bit careful because there is a specific context in which he's saying that particular phrase. Yeah. Right? That isn't, hey, you know, like, the gospel actually has a relatively simple presentation. The complication that shows up in the rest of the New Testament is people trying to bring complication into what
right,
Jesus
where it
has
doesn't
done.
Exist.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
So, I mean, you can use it. I'd be careful. It does sit in a context.
Yeah.
All right. Is that everything you're mulling over?
That was something else. I don't remember what.
All right. Well, keep.
He's still mulling.
Keep mulling it over
with Mike.
I probably forgot it. I'm a dummy. You know what I'm saying? I should have wrote him down.
Hey. So I did have a question. I don't know what ratio exists on you guys' social media or whatever. But like, I have I think two solid individuals that are pretty constant with the unspoken prayer request. Like, that's all. They just type it in. They say,
I block them.
Oh, Dan's not having it.
I no longer have them.
Dan does a filter result search for it.
If you were going to speak
unspoken and prayer in
I will
unspeak
you.
Where does that come from? What's the mind frame of that?
Drama.
Yeah.
You think it's just to like, hey, I don't want to tell you?
I want people to be praying for me, but I don't want to tell them what it is. And that's going to make them more curious, and I'm eventually going to have a very climactic story.
I mean...
Mike seems to disagree.
Well, no,
Are you one of them, Mike? I might have blocked you.
No, Mike says,
I don't remember.
I don't request for Booba.
I've never unspoken anything.
I should have thought that through.
This room is not full of dudes that are unspoken prayer requests, guys. We're like, hey, let me tell you the nitty-gritty details of exactly what's happening.
You know, if I could get people to pray, like, for that to take effect on me, like, pray that Mike does not speak, I think my life would improve.
Could you give me some unspoken needs,
unspoken
please?
Prayer requests, please let me stop speaking.
So, like, I was pondering what the impact that is to be done, right? Like, if people say, look, let's get together and pray, that's to pray as a community of one mind, you know, to God about whatever. But, like, I mean, there's no picture in Revelation of God interpreting vague smoke or I didn't even know how to like, well, God, there's stuff going on.
Yep.
Dear Lord, you already know.
Out. You know, and then God's like, I don't even know what to send based on that, you know. Hold tight, let's wait for something concrete.
Hey man, the first time I ever heard that unspoken prayer thing was when I was at a buddy's church when I was like 14, and it confused me, and I started asking questions of basically the whole church. I'm like, hey, I've been in church for a couple of years, and like, when we have prayer requests, we kind of just say them and say, hey, there's some stuff going on, because that's part of trusting people and loving on people and going, hey, I need some help, and here's specifically what I need. Why are you trying to dash away from that deal? You're trying to not tell me what you want me to pray for. I think the Lord wants to hear specifically what I'm saying. And they all got mad at me because I kept asking,
you're meddling.
Prayer?
That's
is
true.
He going to eventually speak it? Like, is he saying, like, unspoken prayer for now? Is this a verbal ellipsis that's just
Christian,
building suspense?
Right? It's the Christian to be continued.
Yeah, it's like a church sitcom.
It really is. Oh, man.
Continue in the next episode.
More next week.
Yeah. Like, wait up. Is this your way of getting me to come back next week?
Yeah.
So I show up to you.
Come to the
so
prayer
I hear,
meeting.
I get to hear Jerry's prayer request next week because he goes, unspoken prayer request until next week.
Yeah, do people tell you what it was after it was answered either way? They're
right,
like,
do they ever come back like, hey, here was my unspoken
prayer? No, because they forgot.
They forgot what it was.
Yeah.
They never said it out loud.
What was your unspoken prayer request? I really wanted to find a sweet Thai place, all right? I was really excited. When I did, the Lord figured it out.
What I've seen...
Sorry.
What I've seen from these, there's two specific people to do it. And like, generally it's a, unspoken prayer request for a friend. And I think to myself, well then how did you hear about it? Like, I don't understand how it's getting around.
I mean, they're probably just trying not to be a gossip. I mean, I'm sure their motives
are
right.
Well, maybe Facebook ain't the place for you.
Yeah.
Put it in a messenger to no one. Unspoken.
I don't want anyone to know, so I will tell everyone. Just in a very shallow way.
I mean, you're like the worst army ever, right? God's army's only got one tool, and it's Facebook, and we're like, fire!
Can we start the prayer tree? What for? I don't know.
It's like the holy shotgun. We only got one. Don't aim. Just go. Shoot it. Jesus, people band together and pray for nothing. No wonder our country's in the toilet. You know what I'm saying? Can't even hit anything prayer. Specific.
What's up? We don't talk about it.
You know what? And actually, they generally capitalize it. They put it in all caps. Unspoken burn request in caps, so it's allowed, vague.
This is really important.
Yeah, this is a really big deal.
Well, it feels real awkward because it's like someone drops a baby at your door. It's just like they just drop it out in the middle of everyone and say, unspoken prayer request. I'm like, well, what the heck am I supposed to do? What's this baby's name? Like, am I supposed to care for this, or am I supposed to just ignore it because it feels wrong?
Yeah, I mean, there is some type of discernment, right? Like, if a man is a gossip, right? Like, you know, just don't tell him. Tell other people that you know will pray and keep their mouth shut.
Right.
If it's a sensitive kind of deal. You know, I mean, I get people to pray for me all the time, but I mean, I choose them. I mean, it's not like I'm just like, hey, everybody, you know, I'm struggling with this, or my boss is a jerk, or, you know, pray for that. You know, if that's true, I tell like five guys, I'm like, look, I'm struggling with my reaction to things around me. It's me. I would need you to pray for me and the way I'm handling this. And here's what I've done, and it sucks, and I'm not good at it. So can you pray for me, right? And I'll ask like four or five specific dudes for that, but not like, hey, world, you know? That's an odd throw.
Is it, so let me ask you this. So let's say you have something you want somebody to pray on. I want you to compare sharing it on Facebook with a 25 years ago phone tree.
Yeah.
So what are the, give me the over-under on phone tree versus Facebook post.
What's a phone tree?
When you call someone and you call someone and they call someone, and it's usually you'll call like four people, then they all call four people, you know, or however.
Now, when you did that, was it a specific deal?
Yeah. We just get those all the time.
I guess the difference between that is it'll be 25 people that you maybe know or people that you know rather than anybody can see your post on Facebook. You know, like people that you don't know, rather.
Right.
So the problem is. That became a lot of work for me because all these people would be calling now. No, what about George? There's nothing about George, you know. It's Jane.
Literally the game of telephone.
Yeah, it really was.
I guess it'd be bad because the story could get switched around.
It does.
Word of mouth.
The details. A broken leg? No.
His hamster died. What are you talking about?
Exactly.
I didn't know Chuck was 3 months pregnant. I will be praying for that.
I remember one of the quickest things we ever passed through a board meeting once was a literal phone sender outer computer read eyes deal that I could record one message, hit call, and it'd call everybody, and it'd just keep going until
someone automated the phone tree.
Yep,
Dan did.
It was actually called the phone tree. That was the brand name. But then they got the same message, and for a church that didn't spend money, we spent big bucks on that. We were all happy about it.
Everyone was glad.
Yeah.
Paul did a pretty good job with the letter. I'm just saying, like, we could have tried that one.
Well, that's
a long time. Well, he did that quite a few times.
This was before the interwebs and stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what I'm saying, man. Just send it to one person and say, here's who you need to send it to.
Remember, I'm old enough to remember when Neil Diamond wrote songs.
That's right.
That's a very good point.
He was cranking out his own when Dan was in diapers. So, Dan, I mean, were you able to, when you record this thing, can you play it back before you send it out?
Oh, yeah.
Was that a thing? Did you listen back to it and like re-record it multiple times or?
Sometimes two or three times to make sure I didn't like, you know, say Mildred wrong or something.
Right.
It's like, who's Milton?
Yeah, exactly. And
I mean, is there any biblical backing that says prayer is ineffective if it isn't specific?
Well, I think God pretty much know what he was maybe asking for. Like, God know your heart and you know what you meant to say. So I guess if people mess up like that, he knew what they was aiming to do, even though they messed up, you know. So
there are times the Spirit intercedes on our behalf.
Yeah.
I just lean on that. I grunt for a little and say, you'll handle that, right? Because
that's what the Holy Spirit is for.
It feels like you should do everything intentionally when it comes to the Lord. Like, I don't have a verse to call upon with that. Like,
oh,
I'm just
God,
saying,
you
like,
know.
I feel like the concept of, right, but like being intentional about stuff seems to be the right way to do that if you're trying to have a relationship with God.
I don't have the energy to really tell you everything.
I don't really have a biblical backing for that.
I mean, you do have the way that he interacted, like the way Jesus interacted with people, and like even take the picture of the way that you deal with your wife. Like, you just don't show up, grunt a little, and be like, you know.
Hey, sweetheart.
Yeah. All right. Hey, babe, unspoken animosity.
It was an unspoken day. How was your day? Was it unspoken?
Go ahead.
Great. Goodbye.
Go ahead and call your friends. You're going to do it anyway. Yeah, I feel like that's the way to live.
Unspoken marriage. Hi.
Yeah. Marriage over. Hey.
We did those unspoken vows.
Yeah, yeah. Unspoken consequences. I didn't say anything, but I moved out.
We're going to have to build up a real world conversation between a husband and a wife just saying unspoken.
Oh, man. All right.
Yeah, they do be thinking you a mind reader, though. Like mind readers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as much as I suppose I just think it's probably just viewing prayer weirdly, I guess, right? Like, it's not like God can't handle stuff just because you don't say it. And it's not like having communities of people pray on things is bad. It's just a weird interaction both with your community and with God, right? Like, with your relationship on how you interact with God, he's a relational God, he's a personal God, like this odd not saying things out loud thing seems just a little bit weird. And, like, if you're having to couch what it is that you're praying for, like, that's not really your community. Then don't buy a banner. There's no reason to attach it to the plane and fly it around the city and do unspoken prayer requests. Just call a few folks, have them pray it on you, because, like, part of the reaction of them praying for it is them thinking about you, is them caring for you. God uses the process to let your community step in. The guy who's just, like, unspoken prayer request and then, like, thinking all night that you might have a goiter or that your dog got hit by a Buick.
Right. Like, I mean, but that's the thing is, like, merely because it's unspoken, I'm like, what type of embarrassing thing could have happened?
Yeah, then you're worse. Can't even imagine.
Like, my grandma's dying, that's not embarrassing. My kid's in the hospital, that's not embarrassing. Like, these are all things that, like, this is what life looks like when it happens.
It's got,
like,
the toe fungus.
I totally sat on a lamp and it's up in there. You know, is that what you're not mentioning? I mean, what possibly could have happened that you don't want to tell a couple folks and we can't pray on it correctly?
Right. Right. It's because you know you're spreading it too far. Right, you know your audience is too big, so you dial it back instead of just dialing back the audience.
Yeah, this isn't the CIA. You know what I'm saying? You just give us the straight shot, and we'll you know, deal with God on a direct basis.
Yeah, all right.
That kind of made me think. I very rarely offer, like, a prayer request to the group.
Right.
It's got to be big.
Yeah.
You know, when my wife had cancer, I was like, hey, everybody pray. And they prayed. But it's like... So, yeah, that's interesting. Because most, you know, I don't know. I have my people, you know, hey, would you pray for this? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I said, now that actually makes me think, because I think I operate very similar to the way Dan does. And then I worry that, like, I'm passing on the grunts, you know, on the other stuff, where, like, I should have people praying for all kinds of stuff, you know, and I don't.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm like, just when the big baseballs come flying in, I'm like, whoa, everybody's got to get on board on this one. This one's big. And to God, it's the exact same. You know what I'm saying? It's not like it's any bigger or any smaller.
Yeah, I can handle that just like the other one.
So, I mean, where's my line? What line have I come up with that's the difference?
Like, on my end, because I don't want to bother people with, like, I can pray for this,
and sure.
You know, if I sometimes I want people helping me pray for things, but it's honestly pretty rare.
Yeah.
I mean, I can pray about my job, I can pray about my car, I can pray about my health, I can pray, you know, whatever. I don't know. Just made me think.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm right or wrong. It is a fact that when you got a community of guys that's, you know, righteous men that's praying for you, so you know, like, I think that's one thing that we all should get on board with, just, you know, spreading the word with more people and getting them active and doing it themselves, you know. So, I mean, I think that's a good plan, though, Dan, like what you said.
I just want to be drama boy.
Yeah.
Every 2 days.
Well, yeah. So maybe the right way to think about that is if you have a relationship, like, there are certain things that I tell my wife, but I don't necessarily tell everybody because that's the right relationship. That is the right thing to be talking about between my wife and I.
Yeah.
God and I are similar. There are things that I will pray and that I will talk to God about that aren't necessarily things that I would tell everyone because, frankly, God knows me better than everybody else. Mm-hmm. It seems like the right conversation to have. I think the freer you are with the types of things that you share so that you're not – just to make sure you're not hiding things or, you know, like something that's not healthy for you and that's why you're not sharing it, that's different than God is simply the one being that can handle or rightly understand – some of these things that you're saying. So, like, that's probably the right distinction, right? So, like, there's a right audience for those things. And I mean, like, there's guys in this room, right? Like, I would tell the guys in this room, pretty much the most embarrassing thing you could think of if it was on me. Like, I would say that to these fellas. So it's not that, but there are other things that I just don't know how to articulate, or I know that God gets it, or they're, you know, it's a me and God thing, and so I'm having a conversation with the right party, which is God. And so that, like, that's all okay. So, it's probably just making sure that, like, you're not couching audiences because you're afraid of how those audiences will react, but, like, right conversations make sense in the right types of relationships.
Yeah.
So that seems pretty reasonable to me.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, you're listening live from the Path. If you have an unspoken prayer request, go ahead and don't bother shooting that.
Nah, Smith, we not might not be the right guy.
Yeah,
text
yeah.
that to a friend. Yeah.
You want to talk about some embarrassing stuff out loud, though? You give us a call.
You can come on down to the show and tell us about that. That's fine.
Yeah,
yeah. Send a picture. We want to pray.
Well, right. I got one of those.
If it's super embarrassing, we'll just attach Brett Risley to it, and we'll just show his pictures.
The following thing is not happening to this man, but please look at this.
please look at his picture. The other guy didn't want to be submitted. Sorry, Brett.
Go ahead and associate the scenario with this picture.
All right. Mike, did you figure out the other thing you were mulling over?
Nope. Mulling over with Mike.
All right. So I have some, Boovil, you'll never imagine, you never guess what happened to me this week.
Oh, buddy.
I was mowing the yard.
That doesn't happen.
No. Well, here's the deal. I got the kids starting to mow the yard. It's fantastic. It is fantastic. And my wife said, hey, you got to – it's the middle one, so she's 7 years old. But I have a real light mower. I bought one of those electric mowers. They're awesome. And so she goes out there, and my wife goes, hey, you need to keep an eye on that one while it mows the lawn. I'm like, well, then I might as well mow the lawn. No, she's fine. She'll be all right. Like, I said, don't stick your foot under the mower, and, you know, make sure you dump out the clippings, and then we're good. And so it gives me a lot of free time. But anyway, I did find myself mowing the front yard, and some guy comes by and honks the horn and goes, hey, Padre. And I thought, what? What is that? I don't understand. I understand what you're saying to me. Hey, Padre. And then he does. I live on a cul-de-sac. He wheels back around, comes back through there, honks three times instead of the two. He said, I'm talking to you, Pope. And I thought, oh, shoot. This man has mistaken me for the Pope.
Oh, buddy.
And I thought, and here's the deal. As I thought to myself, A, I don't even look like the guy, and the Pope doesn't mow his own grass.
No.
Have you seen Vatican City? There's not even grass in there.
Yeah. I didn't picture grass there.
It's full of bricks.
Yeah, I was going to say.
The Pope says, I don't want to mow this jazz. Brick it. whole place. Put the brick down. And so anyway, like, I don't know how I get out of this situation. This time, so like, sometimes I've heard that when people mistake you for the Pope, there's like thousands. It's just this guy sitting in the middle of my road, honking the horn, selling Pope Padre like that, and I can't get him to go anywhere.
Wow, I mean, that's an intense dude.
I know, and neighbors are piling up on either side, and they feel like I'm responsible for this, of what this man's thinking.
Oh, you better take care of this situation, Ben.
That's what I thought. So I thought, I got to give some sort of Pope-style advice, right? If I act like the Pope, I walk out on the podium, or what is my front porch, and I wave my hand up and stuff, and I give some sort of advice like the Pope would give that's also, like, relevant to my life, maybe he will be convinced and then go on, right? So that's what I do. And so here's the advice I gave him. I said, dude, you got to set proper boundaries. And so he took that offensively as if I was trying to get him to leave my house. And I said, no, here's what I want you to think. You need to set proper boundaries in your mind as far as where you let certain thoughts or feelings or reactions filter out into the rest of your life. For example, I can tell you that most of the time that I have been worried or anxious about something, it taints everything else in my day, right? Like, I woke up worried about something that – in fact, there was a meeting I was supposed to have that I did have today, and I was worried about how the meeting was going to go. I've had some kind of – we'll say interesting interactions with this group of people before, and I ended up being right in the previous instance, so I thought, oh, they're going to be upset, and they're not going to want to help me out on this thing I need done. And so I woke up, and I was thinking about when I woke up, and I was thinking about it when I was driving to meet someone this morning, and I was thinking about it when I drove to work, and I was thinking about it during my other meetings, and I thought, I got about halfway through the morning, and it just occurred to me that, like, I'd let this thing – if it was right to be worried about, let's say it was going to be some sort of tussle, right? The worry about that tussle has then tainted in some way or another or wrongly influenced every interaction I'd had already that morning, right? I did not put boundaries around this particular interaction and protect everything else that I'm doing from something that even – let's even if say that my worry was justified. I did not set the right boundaries on it, and I needlessly – worried about that and brought it into conversations and brought it into the way I was approaching certain things throughout the day. And I thought to myself, like, it's like that. And sin is like that too. So, like, maybe you find yourself in a situation where, you know, you've been tempted in something, and let's say you it got you, right? It bit you. And so one of the wrong ways to react to that is then paint your entire existence with whatever temptation got you that day, and let it paint your next 10 days with it. So, like, yes, you need to deal with the sin that's in your life. Yes, you need to repent. You need to, like, turn from that thing, set right ways to not end up in that situation. Talk to whoever you need to talk to, right? But like, to the extent that it starts to flow over and starts tainting your everything else that you do and the way that you think about yourself, the way that you think about God's mercy or whatever, like, it is – you've given something more power than what it actually has. And, like, if there's a success of Satan is to send out something that is not – that has some power and then convince you that it is much stronger than what it is, right? That is much heavier than what it is. And, like, a lot of times dealing with people who have it's not like a full-on, like a medical-driven depression, but, like, it's a faith-oriented depressive state. And generally they've taken something and they've let it completely paint their world. Right. And in fact, it started to paint over true things that they know about Jesus. And so I guess what I'm saying is like there's you got to be careful here because there is sin can grab a hold of you. Sin can start to taint everything you do, especially if it's a legacy thing. You keep you keep on it. You don't deal with it. You don't react to it. But like there are just things that happen that have X amount of influence. They have a natural consequence to a sin, a natural consequence to something you're concerned or worried or anxious about. And to the extent that you start to allow that to then seep in to other things that are around you, you have given it more power than it implicitly has. Like, there are powerful things that you have to fight against. Be careful not to give it more power than it has on its own by allowing it to seep out and taint other things that are going on around you. So that was my Pope's advice. You gotta just be careful about, like, call things for what they are. Set the right boundaries for what they are. And then be careful that you're not giving them more power, more influence over your life than what they have on its face value. Like, you can move on past these things. It doesn't have to change your entire day, your entire week, your other relationships. Like, call it for what it is, deal with it for what it is, but be careful not to give things more power than what they actually have.
I feel like I've been guilty of that.
Yeah, me too. It's more like a...
Actually, I think Dick Harris has been guilty of it. I just want to.
I think he's mostly guilty.
Yeah. Yeah.
You gotta feel like the walls kind of unspoken. In.
Yeah, I'm unspoken. Yeah.
Well, let me get to the flip side of that.
Yep.
But I was thinking of it. I was trying to process this. I don't know if I disagree or not.
Yep.
Because that can also lead to a compartmentalization, which. And I was trying to decide what's so bad about that. So, I mean, because I agree with you. Because yep. Sometimes things happen and they always start overflowing. So you kind of try to wrap them up and think, well, then we don't like allow our faith to touch different areas. So that's not what you're saying, but
right.
I was just trying to think of what's the unintended consequence maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I think there is a niche there, right? Like it's a niche reaction that says, one thing doesn't have to – I need to be careful about letting one thing paint everything. Yeah. To the extent that it influences it or rightly touches it, that's still healthy. That's a right understanding of your life, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But like in this particular instance, what I recognized was the thing that I was I've just had this before. It especially comes with things like anxiousness and worry is the right thing is I might have an interaction with a group of people in a meeting that might not go the way that I want, and then I will have to deal with the consequences. But like – I spent 5 hours thinking about that when it didn't need more than 5 minutes of thought until after we had the conversation. And frankly, the meeting went fantastic. I mean, it was wonderful. It was a fantastic meeting. And so ultimately, I worried for nothing. I wasted worry for nothing. And part of that was I allowed that interaction to inform or influence the way that I looked at other things, and it didn't deserve that amount of influence. There are other things, however, that rightly have that amount of influence and should. And so it's basically putting things in the right place, not necessarily always in their own place. It's giving it the proper amount of weight and reacting to that and making sure that things do not grow out of control that have no business doing that. Like weed your garden, mm-hmm. right? Pull it out. If it shouldn't be flowing over into the strawberries, pull it out of the strawberries. It doesn't belong over there. And so that was kind of the thought process.
I think you're right. I actually have a pretty good example of this here in the last month or so. My wife had called me, and one of our family members had gotten a test back, and the results were, they weren't great. They're like, well, if it's not this thing, it's this thing, and this is bad, you know, and you know, she was pretty upset, and I said, well, here's the deal, is like, you know, we don't, they got another test to do, and so, you know, you can't, we can't do them any help by worrying right now. Like, there'll be a time, right, like you worry in that meeting when it goes south, right, when you walk in and you talk a couple sentences, and they're like, by the way, we don't like you very much, Ben. Okay, well, now it's probably time to worry. This meeting's not going to go very well. But, like, there was no reason to have it even 5 minutes before you walked in, right? Like, until there's indication that it's going to start going down, then, you know, what good did you really do? You know? And so, and so I that was the advice that I'd given my wife was, like, look, that, you know, if there's going to be a time to worry and put our big boy hat on and figure out how we can pray and help him through this thing, it's coming, but it's not yet. So, you know, let's just wait and see what comes out. And, you know, it turned out that, you know, they were okay. It turned out that the test came back, and it was like this super rare, weird deal. And they're like, yeah, but it's totally treatable and not a big deal, you know?
So if you think about in that context, putting things in the right place, coming alongside someone who is worried because there is not concrete information, perfectly acceptable.
Yeah.
Right? Acting as if the worst possible news has shown up.
Has already happened.
Yeah. So, like, and so there's where, like, there's not a crazy big difference between that because the anticipation of the thought of that is rough. But, like, trying to put things in its right perspective to saying, I don't even know what kind of problem we have here. I need people coming alongside me as I wait. But, like, there isn't any reason to act like it has been the worst news yet.
Yeah, yeah.
But I really think it just comes down to just human instincts. Like, it's sort of like having an anxiety, you know, like you just feel like something happening. You can't take it at the moment. But, yeah. I mean, it's just humans being humans. Like, we think far in the future that we don't know. Only God knows the future, you know. So it just comes down to just trusting in God. And when you do feel the anxiety that you don't know the outcome of something, that, you know, you trust in him, that you send that prayer straight up as soon as it happened. Like, okay, I feel like I'm freaking out. And send that prayer up, and he'll send the angel to come with you and comfort you, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that's what it comes down to, just trusting in God at the end of the day. Like, because, I mean, that can happen to anybody. Like, you can't stop that from happening, you know? Like, and just when it do, just keep God in, man. And as soon as it happened, before you even let your man just spill over and it leak into the rest of the things in your life, just let God handle the situation, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny because they're like, I've met probably equal parts people who are, they have clinical anxiety, right? And then the other 50% have pride anxiety, right? Like, it's just merely that they don't have control over it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just not, and I mean, they're Jesus people. I fall into this category, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I get pride anxiety. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I don't have any control over this thing. And then I start getting fired up about it, and I'm like, man, these are the exact thing that I have a God for, right? These are the exact things that Jesus said, look, you know, this day holds enough trouble without you bringing your schmuck in here. You know what I'm saying? Like, calm down, you know? And so, like, a lot of it, like I said, there's clinical anxiety. There's chemical imbalances, and there's folks that, like, it just happens to them, and it's a rough ordeal. But there's folks that have pride anxiety, like, they're just merely because they're not in charge of it and they don't know what's going on, it's enough to send them into a tizzy. And, like, the thing is, like, that's the exact thing we're battling your whole Christian life, is to try to get your control over it out of it and let Jesus do what he wants to do. And, like, the big things is where it really shows up. The little things where you don't notice it for years and years and years and years. And then a big thing will happen and you realize you are just so fired up over something that, like, it's God's to handle. And, like, if you recognize that relationship and that dichotomy, and you had that in right perspective, you'd still be a little worried, but you wouldn't be all torn up like you are now.
Yeah. And almost everything, once you have some time to process it, you know, it's not as bad as you think. I mean, sometimes it is.
Right.
But when my wife was first diagnosed with cancer, it's been a few years ago now, but you know, I mean, this was the test results. They're like, oh, there's a 93% mortality rate. It is so rare, we don't know how to treat it.
Right.
You know, they got out there, he's spewing all this stuff. So we're going to do something, but, you know, man, and we're going to send it off to someone else too, just for a second opinion.
Yeah.
And see you in a few days, you know.
Right. Go home.
Yeah. Yeah. So then we went into the weekend, you know, and then I think Monday or Tuesday we got stuff. And you know, it was hard not to, but that kind of obviously overflowed.
Yeah, right.
We put on Facebook, we got an unspoken request.
Yeah.
but then it ended up coming back from the other test place. Oh no, this is pretty common stuff. We got this, you know.
Right.
And so we honestly don't know. Was it just a misdiagnosis, or was it because we did get people praying? Did God change it? I mean, I'm good either way. He can do whatever he wants.
It don't matter.
Either way, she's still alive, and that's you know, she wasn't going to be.
Yeah.
And but I don't know, somewhere in there it just triggered something, you know, the thought. You still, either way, you gotta give it some time, and see, okay, now what's next, you know, and even though that's a few days, you have to.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think, like, stuff like that happen, sometimes it could be God testing your faith to see, you know, like, are you going to trust in him? Like, the more I understand, like, God, the more I see, like, it's more tests to come, and, you know, he'll test your faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he can present a problem that's not really a problem, but just to see how you take care of it. You know, like, did you go overboard, or, you know, like, and I'm pretty sure you handled it the best way you did. You know, like, and you a pretty funny guy, so I know, like, the whole weekend you were still cracking jokes, making her happy. And
I'm pretty sure it wasn't. I don't think she was responding well to my jokes.
But I mean, not on her end, but
hey,
I know
you on your tombstone.
I know you were still trying to, you were still uplifting.
Well, right, I found that one distasteful now. I'm a pretty crude guy.
I love the pizza.
That was rough.
I know it could be a rough time.
I don't know why she doesn't get it.
I have a lot of morbid humor, and that is rough, man.
If you only knew what was going on in here with the filters, using the filters on 120%.
That's the truth.
Every once in a while, let stuff out.
We just got what your brain said. Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Usually it filters.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Imagine what got blocked before that came out.
This one will pass. It's not like the other one.
This is the famous thing.
Nothing like that bad one.
There was absolutely no at bat for that idea. It just went straight out onto the plate.
Tombstone, let it rip, Hudson. I got it. We'll cover it on the back end.
Oh, man.
I suddenly have an unspoken.
She's like, you should really have an unspoken prayer request right about now.
Please speak less.
My unspoken request is that I spoke.
Hey, you and Mike can have a Facebook group.
Well, that ain't no doubt.
All right, get off my lawn.
Speaking of unspoken.
Ready, dear life from the path.
Yep.
Whoa, hold on. Something happened. Okay, now it's unhappened. Dear life from the... Well... My fiance, quotes David, and I are getting married soon. We have been living together and engaged for a year and together 8 years. It takes him forever to get things done around the house or buy the things we need. I have tried lists and constant reminders. Excellent. David recently lost his job and is interviewing to find another one. He loves sports, so he plays softball with his friends in a league, which takes up an entire day of the weekend. When he comes home, he wants to watch sports on TV. The house is old. It was my grandfather's. There's always something that needs doing or fixing. When I ask him to help, he pushes it to the next day or says he'll get to it eventually. I told him he needs to grow up and start shouldering responsibilities. This is causing our relationship to suffer. I've been wanting to see a marriage counselor, but David refuses. We're about to get married, and I'm afraid of walking into a trap, and the rest of my life will be in which he has all the fun and I do all the housework. Help!
Sweetheart, you've not walked into a trap. You are living in one.
Yeah, you are in the trap.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He has convinced you to, or you have voluntarily done it. Either way, you are living in a lie of a relationship of which you are acting like you are married and when you are not. He's accepted none of the responsibilities of marriage. I wouldn't anticipate that to change.
Merely because you gave him your grandma's house. I'm assuming you are intimate relations and a place to live. I mean, you've given him everything. The man has had to put nothing into this.
Right. Mm-hmm. He doesn't even respond to lists.
Yeah.
Who doesn't respond to lists, man? This dude's a child.
Exactly. I mean, you've been cackling at him. He's not responding well.
Yeah, you are officially the mother to a teenage boy.
Definitely.
Ouch. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to break that off.
It's done.
I would terminate.
At least go to the counselor, like she said, threatened to. I would say, in this order,
I would kick him out of that house, set up the marriage counseling appointment, and then stop the wedding date, and then you figure out whether you're going to reset that date based upon his reaction to the marriage counseling.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you've been with this man 8 years, and frankly. Here's the sentence. I have tried lists and constant reminders. I mean, I don't know one man that responds well to either one of those things.
Right.
It's sad she's It's sad she's just now getting serious.
Yeah.
You know, she's now just now thinking commitment. Well, they've been committed for a long time. I mean, it's not like it's a fly-by-night relationship, but she's been unhappy and she hasn't done anything. They need to have that conversation.
Yeah, and obviously something like there's a lot that's baking into the thought. Like, oh, he plays – like, what he plays softball with his friends? I mean, so do a lot of fellas, right? So
it
like,
takes up one whole day, man.
Yeah, I mean –
it's ridiculous.
Sometimes that's what softball does.
No.
But it probably – it's softball probably not whatever. Just the softball. It's probably, you know, he
– the hooligan.
I bet he has fun, too.
I bet he goes to lunch and then plays softball, and then they hang around and drink some beers, and then they go to dinner, and then they come home and watch some more softball.
Okay, now here's the thing. I don't. That's not implicitly a bad thing.
Man. It's alongside the doing absolutely nothing else.
He's out there wilding.
Yeah.
I get it. This is broad picture. This character is not a positive one. I'm just saying, like, if you take away the other things that she described about him and just said, you know what? My man's pretty good all around. He does work around the house, provides for his family, but he also plays softball one day a week during the summer seasons. And I feel like we should see a marriage counselor. Like, that's one does not necessarily lead to the other.
Yeah.
Right, but the sum of all of them do.
Yeah, that's it. So you only mentioned the one to add as an addendum onto an otherwise disappointing relationship.
Right. Yeah, you did do that, Bubba.
Sorry. Yeah, David and I are having issues.
Stop the softball.
Let's see what secular advice is. Okay, the question was, help me. Secular says, I'll try. Before entering into marriage, couples should have premarital counseling. Clearly, you and David haven't done that. Please understand that at this point in your relationship, he should still be on his best behavior. This may be the way he handles, or more accurately, avoids responsibility. I recommend you put the wedding on hold a little longer and talk with a counselor. If he's unwilling to go, please don't let it hold you back. You will find it be supportive, enlightening, and valuable.
What?
She's going to go to marriage counseling alone?
Yeah. Boy, I'd say if he's not willing to go to marriage counseling, then
I feel like that's a clear-cut sign if you shouldn't get to that whole marriage portion.
No, yeah. So I would say go ahead and go to counseling on your own if you wish. But don't go to marriage counseling as if that's going to progress your problems. He is a primary source of the discussion.
Yeah, you're not gonna make him like really want to go to counseling with you. Like, there's no enticing factor for a dude to go, man, that counseling looks fun.
Yeah.
It's either guilt, which doesn't seem to work for him, or nothing.
She's just got to threaten him with something that'll scare him. Like,
like, hey, move out of my grandparents' house.
Yeah. Same thing my girlfriend would do. Like, you know what?
I tell you something.
Nick, yes, ma'am.
Personal story. Well done, sir.
You just got to feel the fire first.
Your spaghetti's gross, Mike. That's not right. You've never tried that man's spaghetti. You don't know if it's gross or not.
Your spaghetti's gross. She knows it.
I'm a good cook.
His noodles are wheat. You don't like wheat noodles.
What do you put in that spaghetti, Nick Harris?
Meat and sauce.
All right. Yeah, he's keeping it from us. He doesn't want to tell us.
You're right. You're a real Chef Boyardee.
Unspoken spaghetti. Yeah.
I didn't see that coming.
Nick Harris, I need you to create a cookbook. A full cookbook, and each page has a picture of delicious food, and then it says, unspoken chicken nuggets. This is my recipe for unspoken barbecue St. Louis style ribs.
I got
meat and sauce.
It's
kind of
cool.
Whole thing.
It's like the thing you want to share with everybody.
But I want you all to know that I can cook this, but I don't want you to figure out how to do it. Unspoken recipes with Nick Harris.
Unspoken.
Add meat to sauce. Serve.
Add meat of undisclosed origin to sauce of undisclosed flavor.
Add noodles to taste.
Quote, how hard can this be?
Do I really have to speak it?
That'd be awesome. Unspoken spaghetti instructions are, come on now. I know how to make spaghetti.
Serious?
Next page.
It's a cookbook that assumes that you know how to cook it.
Look at it.
Beef Wellington, come on. You've done this before.
Meatloaf, it's best not to know. Next page.
Nick Harris' condescending cookbook. This is the best.
Hey, we need to get Gordon Ramsay to do the forward for this. This is going to be great.
His second cookbook's called, I Can't Believe I Got Your Money Twice.
The unspoken version. The
unspoken version. It's just blank pages.
Unabridged.
50 pages of nothing.
Now I totally want to publish a book of unspoken prayer requests. It just has a name at the top. Unspoken
spiritual journey
from Tammy H.
The road never traveled.
That's right. We'll put some rain on the front. Done deal.
I don't know what their prayer request, but this field of daisies is gorgeous.
Put a bald stuff going on in there. You know it.
Daisies, a bald eagle, and rain. That's it. They're gonna fly off the shelf.
It's like, oh man, how am I gonna respond to these unspoken prayer requests? Philippians 4:13. You'll be great,
especially if you call it unspoken prayer request for the soul. Now we get $21.99 at every copy.
Yes.
All right. Oh, man. Dear Life from the Path, I've been married to, quotes, Amanda for 4 years. During that time, my parents, especially my mom, have called her and her family trashy because they live in a rural area in Texas. My mother has no reason to abuse my wife the way she does. Amanda's family has always been very kind to me. What really gets me is that my mother also grew up in a rural area. My mother has said repeatedly that if I don't get a divorce, things will never get any better between her and me.
Wow.
Bye.
Yeah.
What?
Bye, Mom.
Yeah. You chose a marriage. You left your parents' house to go with her. Deal with it.
That can't be the whole thing, right?
No.
I mean, I get that's all they wrote, but like, I mean, could that be it? Like, the woman is just
it's certainly
so
possible.
Like that?
I mean,
I wouldn't say it's impossible.
People only look for reasons to call someone trashy after they've already called them trashy, right? So, like, it's usually a visual thing, or the way that they talk, you know? You know, they say something, they drop a little bit more curse words in the wrong conversation, or, you know, they dress in kind of a low-down way, and they're like, trashy. And then they're like, oh, rural Texas, yeah, that makes perfect sense. You know, but, right. Like, if someone shows up in a three-piece, you know, high-fashion lady suit, and they're like, yeah, I'm from rural Texas, trash, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't work like that.
Right.
So, like, I think she's gathering other information, although obviously the mom is completely unreasonable and says, look, you and I will never be the same because I'm going to continue to call this woman trashy. I don't care what you say.
I mean, that's not even relevant to, like, I get that it's his wife, but, like, his mother's ridiculous regardless of who you're talking to. Like, let's say she just had a vendetta against Charlie the grocer. Like, our relationship won't be the same unless you agree that Chuck's a trash ball.
Yeah.
Like, no, we're just not going to do that.
We have differing opinions. We're going to walk away from each other and be just fine.
Yeah, I'm going to say, okay, all right, so Booba. So what is it specifically that you say to this mom?
Mom, I love you very much. You're the woman that raised me, and I care about you. But shut up and stop calling my wife and her family trashy.
See, she's turned you into a trash ball, too. You just told your mom to shut up.
That's perfectly fine. I'm walking away.
You went low like they are
in
the gutter.
I did. I've been to rural Texas. They're cool people.
They're all right.
They're all right people.
They're boobas.
I appreciate those people.
You would awesome. Think so because you became one of them.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mom, you're trashy.
What?
I thought you were going around the room. Why are you just hitting up Booba?
Oh, it seems like it from now on.
I was interested. Okay, wait, what you going to say?
Yeah, I'm like, I love you, Mom. That's it.
She sends this long text message. Mike says, I love you, Mom. Unspoken love.
Yeah. Do you want me to join Booba in the negative throwing pit?
I don't know. What do you think, Nick Harris? Do you go into details here? Or do you just say, Mom, look, I love you, but we're not going to go into this?
Yeah, pretty much. Because, I mean, it just seemed like a touchy subject. You know, like, did you say that they grew up in a rural?
The mom did.
Yeah, the mom did.
The mom that's calling the woman trashy also grew up in rural Texas.
Well, that is touchy. I don't know where she's getting that then. Like, both of them grew up in, like, the same type
Bro,
of area.
Bro, she's angry at her past. Hey, she's excited to have left it.
You could have your wife wear a shirt made out of a mirror. And then, when her mom is calling Amanda trashy, she's actually calling herself trashy. It'd be
pretty
eye-opening a moment.
You want to produce a think piece.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll do candles.
A happening.
Yeah. 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 You can burn some incense.
Welcome to our art exhibit.
Babe, I need you to wear this mirrored shirt. Don't ask no questions.
Yeah.
This is a new performance piece called Hypocrite.
Now, Mom, look at the trash.
Look at the trash. Look at it.
Yeah. It seems like Mom's judging her for all the wrong reasons then. If she can understand where she come from, you know.
Yeah. What do you think, Dan? You could just let it go? Or do you attempt to explain the situation?
Well, I would explain the situation that I've left you, Mom, and she's who I'm married to, so you need to adjust or, you know, I'm not going to let you do this to my wife. I mean,
right?
Yeah, the relationship will move on. I mean.
But it all depends on, you know, Dan, like, just think about it, like,
yeah, Dan.
She's not getting into details about what trash is. Like, it'll be the same thing. Yeah. Like, if your mom told you, like, that's the wrong girl for you. You know, like, we grew up over here, and you know how these women are around this area. So, I mean, we don't really know the definition of trashy. Right. Like, she got to get into details of what trashy actually is. Yeah.
Was your wife shooting heroin when your mom came over or something? I mean, was it completely – are you leaving out behavior that your wife has done – that has made your mom think, I wish my son would have married a different woman.
Yeah.
Right? Is she completely off the rails? You've mentioned none of that.
She's got like a tattoo of Mr. Clean with an eye patch on her back or something.
That sounds awesome.
You know what? That's tragic.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, they're still married.
Yeah.
True. So they need to work out their issues. If he doesn't seem to have issues.
No, he seems to be fine.
His wife and goes to the marriage itself.
Yeah, that kind of does seem fishy.
Yeah. It does. Like a
mom's
big
back on. My wife is absolutely perfect, and my mom is unreasonable and calls her trashy because of where she lived.
Yeah. Just because my wife goes to dog fights all the time doesn't mean that my mom has to be treating her this way. It's just weird. What?
Dog fights? Out of the whole of everything you can pull from the human experience, you go, hey, man, what's the trashiest thing you can do? Michael Vick, dog fights.
Yeah, it's pretty low-rated.
My wife goes to dog fights and lives in rural Texas, and my mom thinks it's trashy. How come?
And she bets on the chickens.
Yeah, I was going to say, just to make a technical distinction, is cockfighting more or less trashy than dog fighting?
It depends on where it's at.
It's got to be less. Chickens don't cost much. I mean, I can kill chickens for $8.
It's based on value of the things that are being killed?
Yeah. No one cares when you don't see people watching a flea fight. You know what I'm saying? Two flies fighting it up. No one gives a crap.
No one could see that.
Hey, Buva, did you go to a cockfight when you were in the Philippines?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I did not have that opportunity. Now I'm... Does that... What, did you?
I mean, you know, this is the internet, right?
Wait a minute. Was this an opportunity? Like, was this in
it's not illegal over there.
It was presented to me.
Really?
As an option.
Man, that's lame. I'm totally going to call my friends in the Philippines and be like, did this happen while I was there and you did not want me to be involved in it?
And that, well, see, here's the deal. I researched it because I thought, I mean, I'd only known these people a couple weeks. They could be pulling my leg and I'm going to end up in a... Filipino.
You're a better traveler than I am.
I don't even
go to a cockfight.
Ben, you're a much better traveler than I am. I just got in the van when they told me to get in the van.
Put this hood over my head? Okay.
My name's Antonio now. What? All right. Just don't speak.
Why is everybody saying Ariba? I don't understand. I understand this world.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they say, hey, cockfighting's legal around here. I'm like, I'm going to have to check on that and get back with you. That's just the type of thing I don't take your word on.
Man, I thought I was a pretty good traveler until just this moment.
I mean, that's like a guy being like, yeah, we can murder people here. You know what I'm saying? They kill them, man.
Like, I don't know. I feel like that I get an idea. I'm like, man, wait a minute. I know we're in the Philippines, but I'm pretty sure murder is still a big deal. Boss.
I mean, here's the thing. It's like I had it in the back of my mind that I thought, I mean, I don't particularly want to go, but is this worth it for the story? Is it worth it for the story to say I went to a cockfight in the Philippines?
Yes.
In the back of a jeepney or something? Like, I mean,
oh, man, that's the best
only
way to
get to a cockfight.
Only
if you bought a pocket watch or something while you were there. You're like, this is the pocket watch I got.
Right. I bought this off a man who had the winning chicken.
Yeah.
Hey, that's one heck of a... I bought a hammock at the place that I went and went snorkeling with the whale sharks just because it was the most random thing that someone tried to sell me. Like, everyone else had, like, little figurines of whale sharks, which made sense to me. And then another man walks up to me with a Jamaican flag hammock. And I'm like, hold up, we are not even in the same ocean as what you're trying to tell me. You get tourists all the time, and most of them are just dumb and don't know what you're doing.
Right,
me,
you know
I know full well what you're doing, and I like it.
He ordered that online.
Yeah, exactly. Here's the $7 you're asking for, sir. I'd like that hammock now.
I bet that hammock was probably made in the Philippines.
It probably was. For Jamaica.
A Jamaican Filipino hammock.
Is this a Bob Marley hammock in the Philippines?
Hey, man, there was a group of dudes who was trying to sell pirated movies.
Yes.
And I swear, they weren't even trying.
Nope.
I mean, they printed off this cover. It's not a legit cover.
It's bleach colored.
Yeah, they off like a black and white inkjet printer.
Yep.
And stuffed it into a case and like they tried to like it's a legit copy. I said, hey man, I feel like that's a pirated copy. And they looked at me and they're like, no.
No, this is legit. This is just how the Philippines operates. It's like I'm 100% certain it doesn't. I've stayed in a hotel.
This is definitely real. And like there was a couple other things where I'm like, hey, I mean you realize that's not how Beats Audio is spelled, right? And they're like, no, that's right. I'm like, no, it ain't. Oh, yeah, it is.
Those markets are always fun, though. Those were my favorite.
I bought Beats Audio headphones from there.
Yes, exactly. BEETS.
I did, and they were. I bought a set of Bluetooth Beats Audio headphones for $9.
Uh-huh.
And like, here's the deal. I looked them up to see how much of a, because I knew they were fake, right? But I thought, like, relatively, how fake are they? So Beats Audio didn't even make this type of headphones. So like, normally what happens in a place like that is like, it goes by failure rate. So if like one out of every 100,000 items fails the test, that shipment goes to the United States. If, you know, 100 out of 100,000 items go, maybe that goes over to Europe somewhere. And if like half are going bad or whatever, they ship them over to the Philippines, Asia, and, you know, parts of southern Mexico, and they end up in those markets, right? And so like, a lot of times when they're not necessarily knockoffs, they just have a high failure rate. Mm-hmm. And then like the packet, they don't ship with the same boxes and all that kind of stuff.
So if you're gonna buy one, you should just buy two.
Yeah, just double them up.
Just there in case. You go.
If, as long as it's better than half price, you're probably still in better shape. Huh. Just depending on the item.
It's dishonest to try and pass them off as real to your relatives when you get home with them, and make it seem like you spent a lot of money on certain things.
I got
like,
you an EYE pair.
Yeah, exactly. I got you a Louis Vuitton.
Authentic Filipino.
I heard that those Beats headphones were really just regular headphones with weights in them. Probably. So they feel like they're more stout than they really are.
No, they are. They took them apart. So like the problem with Beats headphones is that they, first of all, they're over bassy, because traditionally, like this has been true over the last 50, 60 years, is that it cost money for bass. Right, you paid extra money for home stereos and for headphones. Like, they give you a small speaker, and it was underbassed, right? So you knew you were getting a quality product when you got a lot of bass. So what they did was they juiced the bass frequency in there, put a slightly larger speaker in, and then weighed it down and charged four times as much as it should cost to get that pair of headphones. Huh. Right, so like I have studio headphones that I use to do like mixing and stuff every once in a while that are half the cost of those Beats Audio headphones.
Awesome.
You're paying for the name, and you're paying for the extra bass, and you're paying for like washers that they've put in there to give it some weight, because the way they engineered it is if you didn't put those in there, they would seem light, and we equate lightness with cheapness. Okay. Mm-hmm. Except for certain electronics. So like the lighter your cell phone is, you're like, ooh, they've put a lot of money in it to make it light. But if your headphones are light, you're like, this is a cheap piece of crap. I'm not going to buy these light headphones. So like they're into the psychology of how you buy stuff.
Yeah.
And they started putting weights in there.
Isn't that something? Yeah.
But you know what what really weighs more is magnets. And so like you probably did get a higher quality headphone if you bought something that didn't have weights in it and it was a little heavier, because there's a bigger magnet in there. There's generally a bigger speaker in there. You get better bass resound. Like, they figured out how to fool you. They manufactured it cheaper with plastic, and then they put weights in it.
Isn't that something?
You got to keep it's funny. Actually, you want to hear a bunch of guys who can't take that information or who get real upset about that. It's sound guys, especially on church sound guys. They get all riled up about their kids who are buying Beats Audio headphones. Like, those dumb kids buying all those Beats Audio stuff. They just need to get the same brand or whatever this guy's been listening to for 40 years, and he loves them. And they're probably fine. But like, they get real upset about it because people are being fooled by the bass response and the heaviness of the headphone. Done.
Well, thanks, Ben.
You're welcome. Here to help.
Secular's advice about the trashy mom situation.
Right, yeah.
When a man marries, he is expected to separate from his family and form a new family with his wife. You must not allow your mother to belittle and abuse Amanda, who must now come first. Because your mother has no intention of changing, it's time to get a divorce. From her. If you don't, she will not only make your life miserable, but also your wife's.
Secular got me there for a second.
Yeah, don't say shut up.
Divorce.
Yep, divorce your mom. Mom divorce.
That'd be a new television show.
All right. You've been listening to Life from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us. Please. What are you doing over there? Are you singing?
Yeah, I'm digging on this.
What's the matter with your face? Why are you making that? What is that?
Holy cats. Oh, yeah, shoot. I can't.
That's irreplaceable.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for hanging out with us. If you do have, here's the deal. You have a legitimate spoken prayer request. We'd love to pray for you. I will do that.
We won't tell nobody.
No, I mean, no. I mean, I might use you as a shifty example, like you're a pastor's kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, these kids, blah, blah, blah. This happened to so-and-so. I mean, I might do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, probably best stick with your own community, preferably not just a broad Facebook universe. In the interim, if you have any thoughts on the show and they're positive thoughts, shoot us an email, infolifefromthepath.org. If you think the show is terrible, send them to email to croloff@wtru.com. That's Chris Roloff. He runs the Truth Network, which we are not on. But he always liked to hear that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Get some jazz, make some things people listen to his radio station when they react negatively to stuff. So go ahead and shoot him an email about that. Anyway, we will see you next week. In the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Life on the Path.